Hi everyone, I'm Fred Pullen, Director of Product Marketing for Microsoft Edge and Internet Explorer 11. For the next 75 minutes or so, we're going to be talking about an overview of Microsoft Edge, but we're going to go deep. Basically, what I want to accomplish is to show you everything you need to know about Microsoft Edge to be comfortable and confident in deploying it in your own environment. If you don't mind, since it is being recorded and webcast, we'll hold questions until the end, and then we'll use the microphones to make sure that everybody can hear it. But I promise you, I'm going to answer most of your questions along the way. I've done this a number of times. I've met with lots of customers, including I see some familiar faces in the audience, so it's good to see you. Let's go ahead and get started. The story of the browser is really the story of old versus new. You need to be able to support today's websites and services, and at the same time also support your legacy applications, your line of business applications that have been written across the last 20 years of Internet Explorer legacy. So from talking with customers, what we realized was we know we need to support today's websites and services much better than we had in Internet Explorer 11. And in order to do that, we really needed a software as a service. We really needed a browser with more frequent iterative updates. And we've been successful over the last year in delivering those through Microsoft Edge. And I'll go into a lot of detail on each of these pillars. We also know that the internet is not always the source of goodness. We need to be able to surf the web, do our jobs, and do so securely. So there are a lot of features built into Microsoft Edge, and even more features coming that will make it a much more secure browser. Employees need to be productive. We need to be productive when surfing the web. So we have features in Microsoft Edge, not just performance and making sure that you can render your websites quickly and efficiently, take advantage of your battery life, but we also make sure that we have features that go beyond browsing, like Cortana, WebNote, Reading View, and so on. And finally, we realize that customers like you have thousands, if not millions, aggregated of legacy web applications. Those internet applications or line of business applications often use ActiveX controls, Java, Silverlight, and older web technologies. So we need to make sure that you still are able to take advantage of those web applications while you upgrade to modern standards. So let's get started by talking about, and by the way, these slides will be available. I heard someone take a picture. These slides will be available for download, and certainly you can reach out to me if you have additional questions after the session as well. Let's get started with how we wanted to create a modern browser. In Internet Explorer 11, we tried to focus on modern standards. If we encountered a standard that was, say, proprietary to the iPad had a certain way of handling drop-down menus, for example. We treated that like proprietary because we'd learned our lesson. Way back in IE6, IE7, IE8, we had a lot of proprietary functionality. The internet went in a different direction. So as a result, in Internet Explorer, we had a browser that was really focused on modern standards. The irony there is developers don't actually read standards. Developers create websites against the devices and browsers that their users are actually using. Users don't care. They just want a browser that works. So our new focus and our new strategy is really to focus on interoperability with the modern web. We're also very transparent. This is a new Microsoft. On our web dev, the Microsoft Edge dev platform, we have a lot of great content. And I promise you, we're going to do a lot of demos, so let's go ahead and get started with those. I'm switching over to my laptop. I always like to explain my demo environment. This is simply my own production Surface Book, although we are running in a Windows 10 VM. So it's nothing fancy about it. It's a Windows 10 VM running the Windows 10 anniversary update. All right, so I'm right here on the Microsoft Edge Dev Center, and there are a few things I wanted to show you. If I go to the web platform here, and I look at, this is what was on the slide. We have a lot of great information about the status of our web platform, the change log between versions, issues or ways that you can submit bugs. We also have the data that underlies some of the decisions that we're making, and I'll share that in a second. documentation, and a frequently asked questions list. So let's dive in on each of these just briefly, because I want to give you a flavor of the kind of information that we're sharing. In this case, we're looking at the standards and whether they're supported by Microsoft Edge, supported by other browsers, under consideration, or in active development to bring it into the product. So it's a very transparent web platform. If you have developers in your organization who are curious about what standards Microsoft Edge supports, everything is online. And so it's very transparent to see exactly the status of each of these. And if I click on one, I get additional details and whether it's supported in various browsers. Let me go back then. And we also have a change log. And I wanted to show you this briefly because I think it's very useful. Sometimes you get the question, well, okay, Microsoft came out with a new Windows Insider build. What changed? What we can say is, you know what? Let's go to the latest Insider build, which looks like that one. And I can see immediately the features and even in some cases compare it against a previous release. So I can say, let's compare it against the last current branch. Here's everything that changed in that time. So very transparent. We want to make sure that there's no smoke or mirrors here. Everybody knows what's changing in the platform. Let's go back to the platform page. Of course, you can file bugs, and you can look at other bugs and see what the status of those bugs are. Let's also look at data, though. API usage. This is information that you can export. And you can easily look and see across our web crawler that crawls 1.2 million pages plus, these are the actual standards and tags that are used on those pages. Now, I'm an IT pro. I'm not a developer, but this is useful for a lot of developers who are creating websites for your organization, whether it's for internal use or external use. You know, what is Microsoft actually seeing in the wild, in other words? And along those lines, we also have an API catalog. Now, the visualization that I showed a moment ago, the Venn diagram showing overlap between browsers, is nothing more than a screenshot from this page. So what we have here is all of the APIs. I can export them to a CSV file. I also can see, using this visualization tab, exactly the set of APIs, for example, shared by Microsoft Edge and Chrome. Now, this is important because over time, we want to make sure that websites just work. We want to make sure that web apps just work. And our message to ISVs around Microsoft Edge is, if you have plans to support other modern browsers, if you have plans to support Chrome, Firefox, Safari, you should be able to extend that support to include Microsoft Edge. And we're seeing more and more sites, webcasts, press releases, you know, things like that, that now support Microsoft Edge. Not because Microsoft has done anything special in the back end with a special relationship with Apple or with other companies, but because Microsoft Edge is compatible and interoperable with the modern web. That's really what we're aiming for. Now, to give you an idea here, and this is something you can do yourself you know, right now if you wish, but I deselected Chrome and I selected Internet Explorer. And let's deselect specification. So you'll see Microsoft Edge, we have a significant number of APIs that are unique now to Microsoft Edge over Internet Explorer. Now, I'll answer one of the questions that I commonly get right now. Internet Explorer isn't going away, and I'll give you more information about that later. But Internet Explorer 11 is supported for the life of Windows 7, Windows 8.1, and Windows 10 because we knew we needed to support that backward compatibility. At the same time, we want customers to upgrade their web applications, but on your schedule, not Microsoft's. So you have the ability to fall back to IE11, and I'll show you that later. But while you're creating new web applications, I would really focus on the intersect of modern browsers. You know, looking at things like what are the APIs supported by Chrome, by Firefox, by Microsoft Edge, and where are we going with those? All right, let's switch back. So I wanted to give you a walkthrough just to give you an idea of how transparent we really are. We're taking feedback from developers. We're actively involved in the W3C, ECMA International, other standards bodies. So we are taking standards forward, but at the same time, we also recognize that users don't care. Users just want a browser that works, so that's our aim. Now, our progress so far, and I wanted to show you this in some detail as well, we're very, very competitive. Whether you're looking at HTML5 accessibility, and accessibility isn't just for permanently handicapped people. If you have an arm in a sling from a skiing accident, you know that sometimes it's a little bit difficult to click on those buttons. So we want to make sure that we have a browser that's as accessible as possible for everyone. And we've done a very good job at supporting the existing standards and working to advance those standards. If you look at the Kangax tables on GitHub, you'll see that Microsoft Edge is very competitive with other browsers, and more importantly, we've improved significantly over time. Remember I said earlier, Microsoft Edge needs more frequent, minor, iterative updates. Over the last year, we've had 3 major updates and a number of minor ones. So if you thought Microsoft Edge was not a mature product, if you were waiting for kind of that Service Pack 1, it's come and gone. Microsoft Edge is a much more mature product than it was a year ago because we've had a number of these updates, both major and minor. We've also increased our HTML5 tests over time. Let me dive into some demos and show you what I mean here. So you'll see I have some pinned tabs here, and I'm going to go to, this is the ECMAScript compatibility table hosted on GitHub by Kangax, and it shows, you know, if you look at our improvements over time, IE11 to Edge 13 to Edge 14, Edge 13 was the version we shipped last year of the engine. Edge 14 is the version that we're shipping now as part of the Windows 10 anniversary update, and we're continuing to get better and better. Before you ask, Internet Explorer, every time we shipped a new version, we essentially forked the code. So we ended up with IE5 document mode, IE7 document mode, IE8, IE9, IE10, IE11. No more of that. We stopped the madness. Microsoft Edge essentially has one document mode. We don't want to have to fork the code every time we create a new version of the browser. So just like other modern browsers, nobody knows what version of Chrome they're on. Nobody knows what engine of Microsoft Edge they're running. It should just be the latest. Also, I'll share, for those of you who are worried about updates, I think we may as well tackle that now. When we talk about updating the browser, we're really talking about 2 pieces. One piece is updating the browser application. The other is updating the browser engine. And that's what I'm showing you now is the compatibility and interoperability of the browser engine. We've already announced publicly that the app, the Microsoft Edge application that includes navigation controls, Cortana integration, Reading View, the application will eventually get updated through the store just like any other universal Windows app. But the underlying engine is considered a component of the operating system. It also powers other universal Windows apps that use HTML or JavaScript. And that gets updated through Windows Update. So the first question I get from many of you is, what about compatibility? Are you just going to be pushing updates down my throat without giving me a chance to test? Absolutely not. The engine that powers Microsoft Edge, the Edge HTML.dll, will continue to be updated through Windows Update, and you do have an opportunity to test that just as you do today with Internet Explorer updates. All right, so very compatible when it comes to Kangax, and you'll see our improvements over time. Let's also look at html5test.com. Now, I'll admit, I haven't always been a fan of html5test.com for a few reasons, one of which is it doesn't really test for quality of compatibility. It just tests whether or not a browser claims to adhere to a standard. It also uses a weighting that may not be relevant to you and your organization. If you don't care about older video codecs, then a video score may not matter as much as what actual codecs are supported. Does it support H.264? Does it support the codecs that are important to you or the standards that are important to you? But HTML5test.com is a great site that people use to kind of compare browsers and what they claim to support in HTML5.
So let's look. If I go to compare right now, anyway, this is a live website. You can do this yourself in your seat right now. I'm just doing it on your behalf. But if I scroll down here, I'm going to compare Edge 12, which was the original Windows 10 that we released July 29th of last year. I'm going to add to this Edge 13, which was the November update, or what we called TH2, Threshold 2. And I'll add Edge 14. So you can see how we're progressing over time, going from 377 to 433 to 460. And let me also add Edge with all flags enabled. Now this includes some experimental flags that we have. If you do about colon flags, you can see some of those experimental features that are in the browser today, not enabled by default, but this gives you a direction of where we're going with the browser. And for grins, let's go ahead and add the latest version of Chrome that they have on their site, 492. So you can see that we are rapidly approaching Chrome, and we've already beaten some other browsers. And I can just pull up here Internet Explorer 11, 312. We can also look at Firefox, other browsers. Like I say, you can do this yourself. There's no smoke or mirrors about this. 461, let's look at Firefox all flags enabled. Yeah, so we're very, very competitive when it comes to what we're rendering in HTML5. And that gets even better when we look at HTML5 accessibility. This is simply html5accessibility.com, and you can go and see that Microsoft Edge is the first browser they've ever had that scores a perfect 100%. So it may be worth looking at in your organization for these reasons. Let's switch back now. The whole sense that I'm trying to get across to you here is any modern browser should be able to render your website ideally just as well as any other modern browser. So how can we differentiate? How do we differentiate if any browser can render your website? We can differentiate on speed. We can differentiate on battery life. We can differentiate on security and productivity. We can also differentiate on management. So as we go through this presentation, I want you to think about things in your own terms. What's important to you, to your organization? Is security important? I think we can guess that one. What about battery life? How many of your users are actually using laptops and tablets and other devices with battery? So as we go through this, think about what's important to your organization. Let's talk next about security. Now, security is very, very important. You may have seen the announcement we made yesterday about a new feature called Windows Defender Application Guard. I'll be talking about that a little bit later, but I also want to talk about what's in the browser today that can help protect your organization. We have a lot of great features in the browser that we've introduced over time, not just learning from our 20 years of experience with Internet Explorer 11, but also some things that we're able to do in Microsoft Edge that we weren't able to do in Internet Explorer 11 for practical reasons. Now, a couple of concepts that I want to get across to you as we go through this. One of the concepts is defense in depth. I don't know if any of you saw Rob Leffert's presentation yesterday, but he had a great picture of, I think it was Carcassonne, France. There was a castle that had not just an outer wall, but also an inner wall and a keep. If any of you have seen or read Lord of the Rings or Game of Thrones or any of those, you know what I'm talking about. Thousands of years ago, we built a big wall to keep the bad people out, and then we realized one wall wasn't enough. So we started having multiple layers of defense. You build a moat outside the wall. Maybe the moat isn't good enough, so you add crocodiles or alligators to the moat. I don't know. You build multiple layers of defense so that if someone gets past one layer, you have other layers. Well, computer security is still in that state. We have defense-in-depth features that help prevent successful attacks by having multiple layers. We also carry forward a principle called least privilege security. Now, I used to be a Unix admin, Windows administrator, you name it. How many of you are Unix admins and log on as root on a regular basis, on a daily basis? Yeah, almost nobody. Because Unix admins learned way back that if you fat finger something when you log on as root, you can take down your entire server. I'm afraid a lot of us, you know, myself included, I'm as guilty as anyone of logging on with local administrative privileges on my machine on a regular basis. Hopefully you're not logging on with network, you know, domain privileges. But a lot of these features that we've added to Microsoft Edge are not only helping with defense in depth, but they also follow the principle of least privilege security. The bottom line is we want to keep customers safer when they browse the web. The way we do this is to balance our investments across different areas to make it very costly and difficult for successful attacks to take place. Through secure engineering, we've done a much better job in Microsoft Edge than any other browser before it of making sure that we have the least number of vulnerabilities in the browser. So right at the beginning, we have the least number of vulnerabilities. And remember, there's a difference between a vulnerability and a successful exploit. Exploits take advantage of vulnerabilities, but the vulnerability is the possibility. It's the potential for exploit. So we want to eliminate as much potential as early as we can. We do that through not just our own penetration testing and security reviews. We also have bug bounties. We have other things that we do, you know, penetration testing with third party and first party to make sure that we have a very secure product. Next is probably one of the most important, and that's trying to figure out how we break specific exploitation techniques. There's a type of attack, for example, called heap spraying, where if I can get access to memory and I can insert my code into memory, I can hope to take over the machine by creating a heap spraying attack, a successful attack. If we can create features in the browser that help prevent that entire class of attack, then we're not busy playing catch up, offering a patch every time there's a minor exploit that comes out that takes advantage of one specific vulnerability. So this is why I say we're really going after large classes of attack, use after free attacks, elevation of privilege type techniques. We also are trying to contain the damage from successful exploitations by using things like App Container, being able to lock down, even if an attack is successful, you know, closing a virtual machine to limit the damage of that to essentially a paper cup that you throw away. You know, think of the single serving cups out here at the water dispensers. If every time you get a new browser session, you're getting a new paper cup, when you're done with that paper cup, you throw it away, you get a new one. So that's the kind of thing that we're introducing in Windows Defender Application Guard. We're also, through Smart Screen, preventing navigation to known malicious sites. And let's talk about some of these in a little more detail. We do have some of this that was presented before by Matt Miller and Dave, I'll remember the name in a second, sorry. We had some of this that was presented before at a Microsoft Edge conference. So if you do a search on the internet, you'll be able to find links to a security session that goes, you know, into much deeper dive on this. I just wanted to give you an overview and a flavor of some of these features. So App Container isolation is a big one. We started App Container in Windows 8 and Windows 8.1 and then in Windows 10. The catch, though, is in Internet Explorer, you couldn't enable App Container without breaking compatibility. If you're running in a sandbox, it's a much more secure environment, but it came at the cost of compatibility. So we couldn't really recommend that Windows 8.1 customers run Internet Explorer 11 in Enhanced Protected Mode. Likewise, 64 bits. 64 bits does a lot towards helping to prevent heap spraying attacks. You see here an illustration that shows in a 32-bit memory space the kind of attack that you might see from heap spraying, and then that same blue line in a 64-bit memory space. We use a feature called high entropy address space layout randomization, which basically means we're not only randomizing where in memory a process resides, but in a 64-bit memory space, we have a lot of space that we can use. We also are taking advantage of technologies that we introduced earlier, like forcing ASLR, forcing address-based layout randomization around processes that weren't even designed to use it. So the net of all this is, by using App Container, you get a much more secure environment. By using 64-bit memory space, you get a much better protection against heap spraying. The good news is, Microsoft Edge on a 64-bit machine only runs in App Container. It only runs 64-bit. There is not a group policy or a switch to turn off 64 bits and put you in 32-bit mode, because there's no reason for Microsoft Edge to do that. The reason that Internet Explorer by default has 32-bit content processes is that it has to be compatible with 32-bit ActiveX controls. It has to be compatible with your Java implementations. It has to, your JREs, your runtime engines. It has to be compatible with older Silverlight. So today, I promised you I'd do some demos for you. Today we have the ability, if I pull up Internet Explorer here, so again, Windows 10 anniversary update, Internet Explorer. If I go into the Internet options for Internet Explorer, into the advanced options, scroll down to the security section, you do have the ability to not only run enable enhanced protected mode, but you also have the ability to enable 64-bit processes for enhanced protected mode. Now, I've been on this team about 4.5 years. I've been with Microsoft over 12 years. In the last 4.5 years, there were a large number of exploits that were defeated by turning on enhanced protected mode. There were exploits that were defeated by using 64-bit memory space. The reason that we never told you to do that was we didn't want to break your apps. We didn't want to put you in a position where, okay, great, the browser is now secure at the cost of compatibility, and it's not really usable. The good news in Windows 10 is we now have the ability to keep IE 11 in that backward compatibility mode, limit where IE 11 gets used and is run, and at the same time, we're running Microsoft Edge, and it's 64-bit, again, on a 64-bit machine, it's 64-bit and using App Container all the time. There's no reason to turn that off. We also limit what kernel calls that App Container can make. So again, least privileged browsing. We realized an App Container potentially has access to the kernel. So that's, of course, where attackers are going to go. Let's limit the number of kernel calls that can be successfully made from within that App Container. One of the biggest improvements is the reduction of attack surface versus Internet Explorer 11. Internet Explorer 11 today has over 9 document modes. We have document modes for, I said this before, IE5, IE7, 8, 9, 10, 11. We also have high fidelity emulation through enterprise mode. We have high fidelity emulation for IE8, for IE7, for IE5. Put all of those document modes together, and it really represents a pretty significant attack surface versus what we have in Microsoft Edge. We don't support VML, vector markup language. We don't support VBScript. We don't support ActiveX controls. We don't support Java. We don't support Silverlight. One of your questions might be, how soon are you going to support Silverlight? How soon are you going to support ActiveX? The answer is never, by intention. That's why we still support IE11. IE11 is available and supported for the life of Windows 7, Windows 8.1, and Windows 10 to help you with that backward compatibility. Ultimately, you know, it may take some of you years, but ultimately we're hoping that those applications will be rewritten for modern standards and that you can wean yourself away from Internet Explorer. We also limit the code that's run in the browser to signed DLLs. We have features like, and I could spend a long time talking about these, but memory garbage collection is a feature that we use. It was an industry-leading feature, really, to help prevent use after free attacks. If you use an object in memory, get rid of that object. We now kind of do a garbage collection of those objects to make sure that that space isn't going to be reused by someone trying to attack the machine. Control Flow Guard helps prevent return-oriented programming attacks. Basically, what we're trying to do is say, normally a process will go from one process to another point in memory to another point in memory. We now have a list of what those valid points are. And we can manage that and control, through control flow guard, control where we're bouncing around the machine so that we don't go to a place that isn't listed. We don't go to a place that has hopefully malware in it. Smart screen protection is worth talking about in a little more detail because I think this is confusing. We do have group policies for smart screen and Microsoft Edge, and it's worth talking about this for a moment because it's something you may want to consider implementing in your organization. The easiest way to think about smart screen is that it provides URL filtering. It also provides application reputation. So if you download a file, it checks with Microsoft and lets you know if the file is a known malicious, unknown file, or if it's known to be good, the user obviously doesn't see any warning at all. There's a third point of protection, though, that's important to note, and this is something we added last year. This is essentially drive-by exploit protection. Normally, the way smart screen works is it's asynchronous. And I say asynchronous because if I go to a website, let's say I get an email, it looks like it's from my bank, I click on the link, it starts going to what the link I just clicked on, pulling data down to my machine the same time as it's checking with Microsoft to see if that URL is okay. The danger there, obviously, is I may be getting data from that site, if it's malicious, it could include what's called a drive-by exploit. Now, drive-by exploit is a silent exploit. It doesn't require you to click on anything or run on anything. Just simply by going to the site, you're susceptible to these drive-by exploits. This is something we introduced last year for Microsoft Edge and Internet Explorer 11, was now Smart Screen has the ability to block drive-by exploits because we have both asynchronous protection for performance reasons. We also have the ability to push out if there is an active exploit on a website, we have the ability to push out essentially a small blacklist to the web browser that says, don't go to this site, don't download this content. So we not only have asynchronous blocking now in Smart Screen, we have synchronous blocking to prevent some of those drive-by exploits. Now, Microsoft is in somewhat of a unique position. Because we have not just anti-malware endpoints for Windows Defender and Microsoft Security Essentials and our other endpoint products, we also have a lot of folks who download the malicious software removal tool, the MSRT, and run that. So we have some data from that. We have Bing, what's it say here, 2.5 terabyte URL index. We have Smart Screen, we have application reputation, Hotmail, Office 365, Azure, Skype. Microsoft is really the center of this Windows ecosystem. So we're in a great position to collect this data and use it to our mutual customers' advantage. So it's really a great opportunity for Smart Screen to block not just URLs, but also downloads and those drive-by exploits. So how are we doing? Pretty well so far. Over the last year, we've had no known exploits for Microsoft Edge CVEs. You see some graphs here. You'll see on the left, it shows Internet Explorer exploits. I had to say Internet Explorer exploits because there aren't any Microsoft Edge ones, so it was a little confusing otherwise. The number of days with known zero-day exploits in the wild, it went up a little bit for Internet Explorer so far in 2016, but it's still, it's still relatively small. And the number of vulnerabilities by the browser. Now, we want to use vulnerabilities. I don't want to put too much on this, but we're using vulnerabilities as a proof point for quality of engineering. So far in the last year, this is in the first year of Microsoft Edge's life, so I'm comparing July to July. I haven't updated the slide yet for this month. But July to the end of July, we had exactly 100 CVEs. Now, that doesn't represent 100 updates. There may be one update that addresses multiple vulnerabilities. But we had 100 CVEs compared with over 200 for Chrome, for Internet Explorer, and for Firefox. The other thing I should mention here is I occasionally get the question, well, you have CVEs, you have vulnerabilities, that means that the browser is vulnerable, right? Not always. Many of these CVEs may apply to one wall of the defense in depth. Just because you're making the castle wall a little bit taller, or like I said earlier, you're adding crocodiles to the moat, doesn't mean that someone's been successful at invading your keep. It just means that you're patching the wall. So we are able to, and this is true of other browsers as well, through defense in depth, we're able to make improvements to the browser over time where we see that there are potential vulnerabilities or vulnerabilities that no one's exploited, but down the line, they could be coupled with other vulnerabilities in other places to make for a successful attack. Now, this is what's in the browser today. Today, Microsoft Edge is a very secure browser. But that's nothing to what's coming. What's coming is pretty exciting. It's not only, as I mentioned, Windows Defender Application Guard, which essentially runs Microsoft Edge in a virtual container. We also support Windows Information Protection. So let's look at each of these. Windows Information Protection is built into Windows 10, and it's considered a defense-in-depth feature to help, as they said yesterday, it's to help honest people stay honest. This is supported by both Microsoft Edge and IE 11 on Windows 10. It's not supported today by other browsers, but it may be at some point in the future. But today, it's only supported on Windows, at least, by Microsoft Edge and Internet Explorer 11. I also wanted to share a video on Windows Defender Application Guard. This was made by one of the PMs in engineering. So let's go ahead and look at this.
The internet has completely changed the way we work and do business. It's hard to imagine a world without it. Today, attacks frequently target the browser, any browser, as a way to breach organizations and access their data. So it's critical that we make it a safe place. With Windows Defender Application Guard, we want to make your experiences just that, safe and secure. We're excited to show you this in Microsoft Edge. Websites that are considered untrustworthy by your business or enterprise will automatically launch Microsoft Edge in an isolated session. These sessions are visually different to ensure users understand they're in a more secure browsing environment. Enterprise administrators have full control to decide which sites the organization trusts and which launch protected with Application Guard. Our patented hardware virtualization technology extends beyond the kernel level, protecting your network from malware, viruses, vulnerabilities, and even zero-day attacks. This lightweight virtual machine isolates malicious activity coming from the web, preventing it from reaching the underlying operating system, apps, and data. If the user encounters malicious content, it's contained within Application Guard. The user can close this session without impacting their PC or network. So as your employees browse the web, Application Guard and Microsoft Edge keep your business network safe and secure.
Windows Defender Application Guard is a really exciting feature that we'll be sharing more about in the coming weeks and months. It's not something that's supported today. It will be coming into the Windows Insider previews, and it will be part of what we're calling Redstone 2, or an update for next year. But this is an exciting feature because it really gives us the ability to create even another layer of hardware abstraction for the browser. And when you close that virtual container, everything that you've done in that session goes away locally. So it may be relevant for some of your organizations. Now, the next question I can anticipate is, what about a performance hit? What do I need? It does require virtualization technology, so it is based on our own, I'm losing my brain here. It's on the slide here. It's a Hyper-V. So it's based on the same Hyper-V technology. You need to be able to support Hyper-V on the machine. And we've tried to create a lightweight VM, so it won't have the same memory footprint or performance hit that you would take from setting up a full Hyper-V machine running a full version of Windows 10. So we're trying to create a lightweight version that takes advantage of you know, really another layer of abstraction between the browser and the machine. So we talked about security in some detail, and this is, you know, as I said before, security is an area that's really exciting for us. Look for other announcements coming for Redstone 2, because this is an area where we continue to do better and better. Talking about productivity is important too, though. So I recently presented to a group of customers, and these were IT pros like yourself, and they said, well, that's great for us. You've convinced us. Now convince my end user. You know, I let my end user use whatever they want, and many of them may choose to use Chrome. Many of them may choose to use Firefox or another browser. What is really going to win over the end user? So let's talk about that for a minute, on top of just being compatible, because I realize if you go to a site and it doesn't work, you're going to switch browsers. You have to. So on top of just being compatible with a website, we really want to shine when it comes to performance, you know, security, the speed of rendering the website. We want to shine when it comes to battery life, and this is something that's very tangible for users. Try this yourself on this trip. If you have a Windows 10 anniversary update machine especially, try using Microsoft Edge, try using Chrome, see what your own experience is for battery life. And then we want to go beyond browsing with features like Cortana, WebNote, Reading View, and so on. So let's look at some of this. For faster web browsing, this is data that came from a Principal Technologies study. It was commissioned by Microsoft, but the thing about Principal Technologies is they always publish their methodology in the appendix. So this is something that you can replicate on your own. These are numbers for TH2, so they haven't been updated yet for Redstone 1 for the Windows 10 anniversary update, but we expect that the numbers are going to be the same or maybe even faster for Microsoft Edge. So, you know, we want to be very competitive when it comes to how quickly we render a web page. On Google's own Octane 2 benchmark, testing JavaScript performance, Microsoft Edge consistently beats the competition. So again, you can try this yourself. There is one caveat, though, and it has to do with better battery life. If you do this Octane test or any other performance benchmark, you might want to plug in first. Because if you're plugged in, then you're getting the full power of not just Microsoft Edge, but other browsers as well. If you unplug, we may be, you know, throttling you a little bit. Better battery life is an area where we really shine, and this is by intent. Microsoft Edge is only available on Windows 10. So the Microsoft Edge engineering team has worked very closely with the Windows engineering team to make sure that we can take advantage of all the power of Windows 10, including any efficiencies that we can get out of the hardware stack. So let's look at a quick video. So this one, I'll be the voiceover for this. What we did for this was we took identical Surface Books, we attached them to the same power strip, playing the same video over and over and over, and we hit the power button at the same time. And what you can see is when the browsers die. You can do this yourself. Like I say, there's no smoke or mirrors here. Microsoft's not trying to get away with anything. This is something that you can try yourself, your end users can try. If you're on a flight going home that uses streaming for video, you might want to try it with Microsoft Edge, because you can get a lot more battery life out of Microsoft Edge than you can other browsers. One other point of minutia too, currently on Netflix, Netflix only supports Microsoft Edge and IE11 for streaming 1080p. If you use Chrome or Firefox on Windows machine, you're limited to 720p. So even at a better resolution, you'll still have a longer battery life because of those efficiencies of being connected to the operating system. What else? Productive browsing. You can very easily make your mark on the web. You can mark up a web page and share that with friends, family, colleagues. I'll give you some scenarios there. I'll show you in a minute. You can also ditch the distractions and go to Reading View, which just shows you what you care about. Of course, we do have AdBlock now as an extension, AdBlock Plus. But you can also use Reading View on certain devices, and it's especially handy on smaller devices. On a phone or a tablet, If I use Reading View, I may not need my reading glasses because I've defined the Reading View fonts to be just a little bit bigger than the normal fonts. This is especially useful on a very small tablet. Sometimes I have to scroll around the page depending on the way the page is designed. It's very easy for me to go into Reading View and see that content. I can also use Cortana to do more faster. Today, we issued an infographic that was commissioned by Microsoft of Forrester Consulting. And I'll make this available to you at the end of the session for download. But it was just published on Microsoft Downloads today. What we found Forrester went out and surveyed 168 IT pros who had implemented Microsoft Edge on 500 desktops or more. And what they found was that a very significant number, I think it was 90%, we'll look at the infographic in a minute, but 90% said that they had experienced some productivity improvements by using Cortana. So that's pretty significant. Obviously, your mileage may vary. It depends on your organization and how you use it, but it's worth looking into some of these features that go beyond browsing that are built right into the product. And of course, we have lots of new features. Microsoft Edge is not a new product. At a year old, in internet years, that's 7, 8, 10 years? At a year old, we've had 3 major updates, lots of minor updates. We now support Microsoft Edge extensions. We now can clear the browsing data on exit. It's up to you. You can pin tabs, as I showed you before in one of the demos. Favorites improvements. Paste and go is interesting. If you have copied something to your clipboard, you can right-click in the address bar and choose paste and search or paste and go. So there's a lot of great features that are built into the browser now that we've had the opportunity to get pretty far down the wish list. Now it's funny because paste and go, paste and search is something I had never even heard of, but apparently it's important to some folks because we had gotten that far down the list of things that are important, and now engineering now supports this. So lots of fit and finish improvements in the product. If you used it a year ago and you thought this is not so good, use it again, try it, because we know that users who are trying the Windows 10 anniversary update are much more likely to stay with Microsoft Edge because of these improvements, because of the improvements not only in compatibility and performance, but also the improvements in just general fit and finish and supporting extensions and other features. All right, so let's go into a demo. I want to show you a few things here. So I'll just assume you've never seen Microsoft Edge before. You can see here that the navigation controls are pretty well understood. You have a back button, a forward button, you have refresh. This is a favorites bar that you can turn on in settings. I'll show you that in a minute. You can also create new tabs. And as I said before, you can pin tabs. So if I right-click on something on a particular tab, I can pin it, which takes it down to this much smaller footprint and automatically opens it when I reopen the browser. Now, some specific features here. If I go to the hub, I see my favorites. I also have reading list, history, and downloads. Now, this begs the question. Lots of folks ask me, Internet Explorer 11 was so easy to manage when it came to favorites, because favorites were simply stored in a hierarchical folder. There were links in a hierarchical folder, so I could push them out to machines, I could move them around, I could do whatever I wanted with them. Now in Microsoft Edge, we're using a JET database, we're using an ESE database. Why the database? Why are you making it so difficult? And there's a couple of reasons. One is security. We didn't want to make this app container have relatively easy access to the underlying operating system and files. But the second reason is just as compelling, and that's we want to provide a much richer user experience. So if I look here, for example, if I go to my reading list, I see that I have links and pictures from each of these things that I've saved to view later. And of course, they synchronize using OneDrive, and I can view them on any of my Windows 10 devices. I can go home and continue reading the article that I started at work, things like that. In order to enable a much richer experience, we needed to store the metadata. We needed to store the pictures. We needed to store the extra information. If any of you have looked at your browser history, and you look at one completely incomprehensible URL versus another completely incomprehensible URL and try to figure out which one of those is the red chair I was looking at last week, you know the problem. That is the problem we're trying to solve, is to create a much richer user experience. But there that obviously comes at a cost, and the cost is putting it into a JET database so that we can store that extra metadata associated with the page or associated with the reading list. Now, the next question you obviously have is, when am I going to be able to either better manage those Microsoft Edge favorites, or how do I keep my IE11 and my Edge favorites in sync with each other instead of just doing a one-time import? Those are close to the top of the list for Redstone 2, both of those. Yeah, I heard someone clap, so thank you. We've heard your feedback loud and clear. We aim to deliver. So you can expect to hear more about those features in the coming weeks and months as well. We do have some of that today, and I'll show you what's available today, but I know it's nowhere near what you want it to be and need it to be for your organization. So we do want to make sure that you can both keep them in sync and or manage the Microsoft Edge favorites separately. All right, a couple other features here. Let me go to website. We'll try this Explorer Resort Costa Rica. This is a demo site. This resort doesn't actually exist. But you know, if I click on something, I can very easily, let's say this is interesting to me, I can click on WebNote. I can, you know, make changes to it. I can clip parts of it, you know, and save it. So automatically copies to the clipboard what I've outlined there, so it makes it very easy. I also can annotate things. So let's say I'm just using mouse and keyboard. I don't need to use a full touch device. This looks great. Let's do this. You know, something like that. I can also very easily save this or share it with others. And of course, the share is extensible. It's anything that handles, I think it's a PNG. So any application that I have installed that'll handle a PNG should be able to take the share from this WebNote. Another thing we have is Reading View. You'll notice this icon lit up, and it kind of shows the pages ruffling. If I click on Reading View, it takes me to a view that gets rid of all the distractions, gets rid of the other stuff on the page, just keeps the things that I care about, just keeps the things that I want to read or see. So not all pages will work with Reading View, but Microsoft Edge will use kind of an intelligent heuristic to figure out, will that page on this newspaper or this other website render in Reading View? And as I said before, on a desktop, it may not be such a huge difference, especially if you're using Adblock or another extension like that. On a small device, it makes a huge difference because now I need these. I need my reading glasses. So if I'm on a small device, I can hit Reading View and be able to read the article in a larger font without necessarily needing to go find these downstairs. So it's pretty handy. All right, a couple other things I wanted to share with you. And for this, actually, let's go to a different site. Let's go to Barolo Grill Denver. This is one of my favorite restaurants in Denver. I lived in Colorado for 12 years. So good restaurant, recommend it highly, personally. But we also shows I've got directions, hours, and more. So if I go to a restaurant site, if I go to another site that Cortana knows about, I can click on this link, and Cortana will immediately tell me information about the restaurant. Now, they've updated their website a few times in the last couple of years. I don't know where the phone number is on the Wenu website. I don't know how to easily find directions, but I shouldn't need to. Now, Cortana integration is pretty important because normally when I started my day a few years ago, I started it with a blank desktop, and I opened up a new tab, and as I was researching things, maybe looking things up on Wikipedia or doing a search on TechNet or MSDN, I'd open up more tabs, and at the end of the day, I'd have 30 or 40 open tabs open. Does that sound familiar to anybody? Yeah. Well, now I don't need to open up nearly as many tabs. And I'll be honest, once I'm on Wikipedia, it may be 20 minutes before I get out of Wikipedia because I'm interested in the topic and one thing leads to another. And you know, now I'm able to look up the information I need and get right back to what I was doing. So it's much more effective at just getting in, getting out very quickly. I can look here, for example, at directions, hours, Yelp reviews. You know, it's information that's useful to me in the context of this restaurant. And we've already added things like coupons. So if you go to a website that where Bing or Cortana knows about coupons, Cortana's going to bounce up and say, hey, I've got coupons for you. Are you interested? Some of this functionality works even in the context where you've chosen to turn off Cortana. So even if you've chosen to turn off Cortana for your organization, some of this is based on search, and it may still work. I'll give you an example here. So built into the address bar, I can type in MSFT, and it immediately gives me the stock price, up a dollar so far today. So without having to go to a website, without having to navigate through that website, maybe it was the wrong website and I meant to click on this other link, you never know. This makes it much easier for me to find what I want without necessarily having to surf around and drill for it. Now you notice on the left, there's the Cortana ring. If in your organization you've chosen to turn off Cortana, and I think Cortana is a wonderful product, I encourage you to use it, but if for some reason you have some impediment that prevents you from implementing it, the only difference between this experience and a non-Cortana experience is that ring goes away. It's still powered by Bing. It's still functional. The browser still is able to look this information up using Bing. And you'll see in the upper right corner here, it says Bing Search. It's still powered by Bing. The only difference is it won't be attributed to Cortana. Likewise, if I search on the weather, all right, it knows I'm in Atlanta, Georgia. You know, there's always a trade-off between what I choose to share. You know, we want transparency, and we also want choice. So if I choose to share my location, Cortana can give me more useful results. If I choose not to share my location, then maybe Cortana won't have or Bing won't have as useful results. But in this case, Atlanta, Georgia, 87, it's a little cooler in here. But I'm able to look up information very quickly using Cortana. There's one other use of Cortana I should mention, and that's right-clicking. If I go back to our resort here, Explore Resort Costa Rica. If I highlight Costa Rica and right-click, I have Ask Cortana. So maybe I don't quite know where Costa Rica is. Looks like it's in Central America. And I can scroll down and find some information about Costa Rica very quickly. As I said before, this is a great resource because it pulls in data from multiple sources to give me a quick view of, you know, what I care about. So I can immediately look up some information about a location, about a person, about a different topic. Oh, that's what it was. Okay, now I go back without needing to open up a separate tab for Wikipedia and then spend the next hour learning about Costa Rican traditional culture. Which is, you know, my own foible. All right. Some other things I wanted to show you here. Let's go into, and obviously I have the ability to share, as I said before. I'm just working my way through the UI for you. We have new windows. We have in private browsing. We can cast media to a device. So if you have a device, you can throw the media to that TV or other device. So you can play videos, for example. Find on the page, print. F12 developer tools are still supported in Microsoft Edge, and we're making those better and better. Open with Internet Explorer, send feedback, extensions. Let's look at extensions. Today, right now, I have the translator extension installed. If I go to get extensions from the store, you'll see the curated list of extensions that we have today. Now, there's a trade-off. Again, we could open the floodgates and let anybody create an extension and upload it to the store. Some other folks have done that, not always the best results. Instead, we're trying to make sure that the extensions in the store are of a relatively high quality and that they don't represent malware. So you may see in the store extensions that are very popular, and we're working our way down the list. You may not see your favorite very vertical extension. Let us know. Tell us, because we want to extend support for the extensions that matter to people. And developers, IT pros, end users, everyone. So
We chose to support some of the most popular extensions in the world. Obviously, and I'll scroll down a little bit. There's another few below the bar there. So there is an extension here for developers, a page analyzer, mouse gestures, Reddit, Office, Adblock, Adblock Plus, Evernote, and we have more coming. There are more in the pipeline. So we'll continue to increase the quality and number of extensions here. Let's go ahead and look at one of the extensions that we have already installed on this machine. And for this, I'm pulling up a TechNet page that happens to be in Spanish. Now, I grew up in Miami, but it's been more than 30 years since I studied Spanish, so I'm a little rusty. Often, I go to technical sites, or someone will say, hey, I wrote a blog on Microsoft Edge. Can you check its technical accuracy? I'm in France, so the blog is written in French. I don't speak French either. The good news is this makes it very easy for me to go to this extension. You see this icon appear now. And translate the page. I can even choose to always translate foreign language pages. So at that point, I don't even notice whether the page is in Japanese or Chinese or French or German or Spanish. It shouldn't matter. I can just go to translate this page, and it shows up in rough English. But it's very useful for me. It's very useful for me in my job. I promised to also mention one scenario, and I should mention this too. If you are a web developer, or if you're a line of business application owner who works with web developers, using this functionality to say, you know what, let's change the size of this, let's update this to the most recent logo, let's do this and that and the other, makes it very easy for me to work with my developers if I have the ability to very quickly give them feedback on a page without using any third-party applications. It's just built right into the software. Let's look at a few of the Let's look at a few of the settings as well. There's a what's new tips and tricks. We have a dark theme. I don't know if you're an adherent to the theory that if you view very bright objects before you go to sleep, you have trouble sleeping. Viewing a dark theme has started to help me sleep a little better, so your mileage may vary. You also have the ability to open Microsoft Edge with a specific page or maybe the previous page or the standard start page. You can change favorites, show the favorites bar, show only icons, import favorites from Internet Explorer. We also have the ability to import from other browsers as well. It just depends on whether or not the browser is installed on that machine. So I didn't see that UI because I don't have Firefox or Chrome installed. I can choose to clear the browsing data, and I can even clear this when I close the browser. You saw this feature on the previous slide. And then let's go to, lots of features here. What size do I want for the font? View advanced settings, show a home button, block pop-ups, use Adobe Flash Player, and so on. By the way, before you ask, we do have a group policy coming that will give you some flexibility on how you want to instantiate Flash objects. We know that's a concern for some of you. So we do have the ability today to block Flash, for end users. Open proxy settings. Microsoft Edge and Internet Explorer do share some settings when it comes to networking. So your proxy server, your network stack are going to be shared between them. Let's go ahead and switch back. Gesundheit. So last but not least, we want to make sure that we have a solution for you that's compatible with your legacy line of business applications. You may have hundreds or thousands of applications that still use ActiveX controls, that still use Silverlight or Java, JRE. So we want to be able to support those applications and create an easier experience for you. Now, Internet Explorer shipped over 20 years ago, so there are a lot of applications out there that still use those older technologies. This is why we still support Internet Explorer 11 for the life of Windows 7, Windows 8.1, and Windows 10. We want to create a consistent experience across those. If you've already done the work to upgrade to IE 11 on Windows 7, good news, you've done part of your Windows 10 migration. So I'm not saying it's easy. I was an IT pro for way too many years to say that any of this is easy. But if you've already done some of that work on Windows 7, you've already done a piece of your Windows 10 migration. How many of you are using enterprise mode today on Windows 7 or Windows 10? Yeah, a lot of you. I have a talk that I'm giving on Thursday. It's another deep dive on enterprise mode. This time it's in the context of Windows 10. So how do you enable enterprise mode more in a Windows 10 environment? And I'll be, you know, Josh Rennert and I are going to be going into a lot of detail on that on Thursday. We did make some improvements in the Windows 10 anniversary update behind this experience, though. And very simply, you can use Microsoft Edge as your default browser, fall back to IE11 automatically for sites that need that backward compatibility. And one of the improvements we made is we get rid of the interstitial page by default. That page that says, you know, essentially your administrator has configured this site to run in Internet Explorer. At the end of the day, customers were saying they had 30, 40, 50 tabs open that said the same message. That was kind of useless. You can have a group policy, or there's a group policy that re-enables that interstitial page, but the default behavior is not to show that. And the second group policy that I wanted to share with you that's exciting is you can go right back to Microsoft Edge for sites that are not on your enterprise mode site list. So essentially, this is least privileged browsing. You've told your end users, and if you choose to configure it this way, it's up to you, but you could configure Microsoft Edge as your default browser for safer, faster, more productive browsing, fall back to IE11 only for the sites on your whitelist, only for, you know, you fall back to the less secure, more compatible browser just for those sites that you've approved, and anything else goes right back into Microsoft Edge. Let's look at a quick demo. All right, so here we are back in Microsoft Edge. Here's a purchase order site and a travel site. These are demo sites I created years ago, but they still get the point across. These are sites that were written to use enterprise mode, and they require ActiveX controls. They require that high fidelity IE8 emulation. They haven't been rewritten for Microsoft Edge. So if I click on purchase order, I have my purchase order site. Pretty seamless, right? We're in Internet Explorer 11. As an end user, there's nothing I need to know, nothing I need to do. I just am automatically put into Internet Explorer. Now, once I finish my session here, if I use a favorite in Internet Explorer, or if I type in a site, let's go to TechNet, it finishes the browser session right in Microsoft Edge. So it really is, and our network connectivity may not be the greatest here, but it really is a more seamless solution. You can standardize on Microsoft Edge, fall back to IE11 if you need to, and then get right back into Microsoft Edge for everything else. The consumer experience I should mention briefly, and that's we still have a public compatibility view list, and you can look at both the enterprise mode site list and the compatibility view list by typing about:compat in the address bar of IE11 or Microsoft Edge on Windows 10. And this will show you the sites that are on both the Microsoft compatibility view list, the list of public-facing websites that still require Internet Explorer, and it will show you your own enterprise mode site list that, as it's applied to that browser. Now, we didn't want any public-facing site to automatically switch a Microsoft Edge user to IE11 for security reasons. Because again, if there's an IE11 drive-by, you know, I'm not aware of one right now, but there could be one around the corner. If there's an Internet Explorer 11 drive-by exploit that takes advantage of the browser just by going to that site, we didn't want any site to tell Microsoft Edge, switch to IE11 automatically, and then you know, automatically push that user and make them vulnerable. So the list of sites is fewer than 2,000 sites. Many of them are in Korea, Brazil. There are still some countries that tend to use ActiveX for their PKI. So some of these sites will require Internet Explorer to authenticate. We're certainly working with the ecosystem. We're decreasing the number of sites pretty rapidly, but currently it is just south of 2,000 sites worldwide. Microsoft Edge policies. Last demo, and I'll show it you just briefly. I'm going to switch over here. gpedit.msc, and there's one particular thing that I wanted to show you. If I go in, we have policies on both the computer and user branches. If I go into administrative templates, Windows components, Microsoft Edge,
You'll see some of the group policies that we have configured. In this case, the only one that I've enabled is the Enterprise Mode site list. Now, in Internet Explorer, we have over 1,600 group policies. Most of those group policies are irrelevant for Microsoft Edge. If you think about it, there's always a balance between security and functionality. So in Internet Explorer, it was great that we had the ability to run unsigned ActiveX controls. But you didn't want to run them for every site everywhere across the globe. You probably only wanted to run unsigned ActiveX controls maybe for trusted sites or for intranet sites. So we had one policy, you know, allow unsigned ActiveX controls, and then we had to cascade that policy across intranet zone, trusted site zone, intranet zone, for computer and for user. So one policy that was cascaded 6 or sometimes 8 or 10 times. There are actually only about, I think it's about 500, maybe less, unique Internet Explorer 11 policies that just needed to be cascaded across those zones. The good news is because it doesn't support ActiveX, because it doesn't support Silverlight, it doesn't support Java, it doesn't support those older web technologies, there's no reason for Microsoft Edge to have those policies. I have some customers who come to me and say, okay, the optics don't look good. Microsoft Edge only has, you know, if you add this up and double it because we have computer and user policies, maybe about 50 policies, you know, and then you can add the proxy and other network policies to that list. Whereas Internet Explorer has 1,600 policies, you have to be missing something. My response is it's secure not by default, but secure by design. It doesn't support those older web technologies. What policy are we missing that you need to deploy for Microsoft Edge? So far, we have very, very few policies that customers tell us they need that are missing from this list. If there's something that's missing from this list, let us know, because we want to add that to the list of things that we're bringing into the product. Now, there's one other thing I wanted to show you briefly because it's a little confusing. I've had some people reach out to me and say, I love the idea of falling back to Microsoft Edge for every site that's not on my Enterprise Mode site list. I can't find that policy here. It's because it's in the Internet Explorer section. And if I scroll down, I only have two policies enabled here. I'll be going into a lot more detail on Thursday. Use the Enterprise Mode website list, and then if I scroll down, send all sites not included in the Enterprise Mode site list to Microsoft Edge. Enable that, GP update force, and you're good to go. So enable this policy, and even on my demo machine, I just run a command line, GP update force, and the next time I start up Microsoft Edge, Microsoft Edge will go to Internet Explorer 11 for sites that are on that Enterprise Mode site list, and then switch right back for any sites that aren't on the list. So we covered a lot of content. I talked about how Microsoft Edge is designed to be interoperable with the modern web, how it's a much more secure browser, how it goes beyond browsing with productivity improvements, battery life, and performance, and how we also support your legacy applications. I promised you an infographic. If you go to aka.ms/edge-infographic, you'll be able to download this. There's a PNG version as well as a PDF version. And it goes into a lot of details on this Microsoft commissioned Forrester survey. 168 customers who are running Microsoft Edge, 500 seats or more, US, UK, Germany, and Japan, because we wanted to get a good mix. And the results were quite often surprising. And I'll be really transparent here. I work in marketing now. I'm not in engineering anymore. I work in marketing, so if this had been negative for us, we still would have published it, but I use it as a hammer against engineering to create a better product. I got nothing to complain about here. The results from this survey are very, very positive for Microsoft Edge. People who are implementing Microsoft Edge, and 90% say they've either finished their implementation of Windows 10 and Microsoft Edge, or they're ramping up over the next year. Very, very few customers had real substantive complaints about the browser. Our guidance to you is standardize on Microsoft Edge for safer, faster, more productive web browsing, and fall back to IE 11 just for the sites that need that backward compatibility on Windows 10. Now, obviously, upgrading your apps to modern standards is the best long-term solution,
But we didn't want to force you to upgrade on our schedule. You can upgrade on your own schedule and continue to use Internet Explorer 11 for that backward compatibility for the life of Windows 7, Windows 8.1, and Windows 10. Additional resources, as I mentioned before, Josh Rennert and I are doing a session on Thursday that's a deep dive. We also have some other sessions. And I'll leave this up. I think we have time just for a couple of questions. We're essentially out of time, but if you do have additional questions, please use the microphones so that the streaming folks can get that. Yeah. Again, I really appreciate your time. I know some of you are booking your next session. Thank you very much. Yes, sir. Is it live, or does he need to turn it on?
No.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Especially the synchronous. A few months ago, we had some of our internal sites suddenly stop being displayable in both Edge and Internet Explorer. We have a career case open on it. They've been working on it. They say that it has some hard to do with an update that was pushed out. If we remove the latest cumulative update from Windows 10, everything starts working again. Does this sound like it might be that synchronous that somehow we're getting a false positive on these sites?
It's okay, if it says the page cannot be displayed, that's not a smart screen message. So it's not a false positive for smart screen. If you do get a false positive for smart screen, you'll see a big red banner, you know, this site, you know, known to contain malicious, you know, stuff. There is, if you do the dropdown from there, you can report the site as safe. So that's the quickest, fastest way, and then obviously start a Premier support escalation to follow up on that. But quickest, fastest way to report a false positive is just to use that. This sounds like it may be something else, and I'm happy to work with you offline on this. Yeah, question over here.
Yeah,
okay, yeah, there's a couple of questions here. One is, there are extensions that we now support in Microsoft Edge. Currently, we don't have any third-party extensions. Many of the third-party extensions exist to remind you that they're working. They don't actually add to the security of the browser. But that is something we're working on with third-party AV to where it makes sense, we want to have extensions that will provide additional security or additional end-user functionality. If you're asking specifically about the Windows Defender Application Guard, that is so early that everything's still TBD. I would say, though, in a completely virtualized environment that's already itself protected by smart screen and other defense-in-depth features, it's unlikely that you need a third-party AV inside the VM. But you know, it's very early, and I'm not an engineer, so you know, we'll have to see as that feature evolves what we can do to increase the security within the VM. Good question. Thank you. Yes, sir. Yeah, the question is about home pages. There's really a couple things we can do here. There are home pages and there are start pages. So there's a home page and there are start pages. There's also favorites. And I'm very interested in your feedback because the way we've configured it today, and Josh can correct me if I'm wrong, the way we've configured it today is that you can define the set of start pages or the home page, but I believe the end user can override that today. So you can define this for an image, but there is a group policy for defining a set of start pages, but the end user can go and override that and change that later on. Starting with the anniversary update, they can't change it anymore. That's great feedback. Thank you.
And that's a problem.
Okay. So you want the ability to do both. You want some cases the end user needs to be able to override it. We certainly got feedback from a lot of customers that they didn't want the end user changing it. I think there should be a policy that you could choose.
Correct. GPS should be
Yeah. Makes sense. I'm sure this is something they're considering for RS2, and it's great feedback to give back to the engineering team now. So it's very, very timely. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Specifically related to enabling the non-protected mode and Yeah. Can you show it actually working?
Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, it takes me a reboot of the machine, but after the session, let's huddle out here and I'll show you it working. As far as we know. Now, if it didn't work, there may have been a bug temporarily that prevented it from working, but the intent, obviously, is for IE11 to have the same functionality. And yes, it should support App Container. It should support 64-bit processes. I know that this works. I tried this on a home machine last week, so I know 64-bit works. I didn't look at the whether or not it runs with an App Container, but it should. It does require a reboot. It doesn't simply require restarting the browser. It does require a reboot of the machine. So that may be a catch. I think we're out of time, and I need to be respectful of the next session, of the next presenter. If you don't mind, I'm happy to go outside and answer any questions for as long as you guys want. Again, thank you very much for your time. Hopefully this was useful for you.